Let me just say at the beginning, there really are no words to express just what a privilege it is to be able to be with all of you, to be able to worship God in a place like this, with those like you who love and care about Him. I think that we should treasure the moments that we have like this. I think this is really by far the best part of every week, the times when we can be together with our minds centered upon our Lord. We made an announcement in the bulletin about our topic this morning. It's making moral decisions a vital example. And I'll say, I think there are a number of applications, that you could make from the lesson we're going to talk about this morning. But we're specifically going to talk about the question of a Christian and the use of alcoholic beverages. We're going to narrow down on one example with some decisions that need to be made. And I'll just kind of put it this way. Should a Christian ever drink an alcoholic beverage in any quantity, in any circumstance, in a private, maybe more social type of setting, or even alone? And I want to try to persuade you this morning, if you can think of this lesson and what kind of genre it is, this is a persuasive lesson. And I want to try to persuade you to a certain point. I would like you by the end to agree with me that it would be sinful for a Christian to knowingly consume alcoholic beverages in any quantity. And I think in order for us to do this, we're going to have to reason together this morning. You're going to have to put some effort into this lesson, and I'm going to do my best not to use much of what you might think of as a preacher's tone, a preachery tone to this, because I want you to be convinced by the Scriptures and not by my passion. And I have a certain feeling for this topic, but my thoughts, my opinions, my passion is really not what matters. It's what the Scriptures themselves are going to say. And I want to indicate at the beginning that if you look very carefully at what I want to persuade you of, what we're not really going to talk about is drunkenness. I would like to think that because the Scriptures are very plain about that, and I'll just mention one passage and we won't mention any others. You can look at Romans 13 and verse 13, and you'll see this very clearly, that the Bible condemns drunkenness, and I'm just going to assume that everybody here, all of us, agree with that completely. And that there's some point at which in drinking alcohol you reach a point of intoxication, drunkenness, and that without any question is a sin. We don't really need to even try to make a persuasive point about that, but rather that we all agree with it. But I have a number of comments I want to make before we kind of dive into a more careful consideration of what the Scriptures have to say. First of all, I want to tell you that I am not aware of anybody here who regularly drinks alcohol and at the same time defends that use. I don't really know of anyone who takes the opposite position of what I've put on the screen, but nevertheless, I have no question that there are some who do have a different position in that regard. And I'm quite confident for a number of reasons that this kind of practice does go on. But it may help you to know this at the beginning because it may give you a little bit of comfort, a little bit of breathing room to understand that I don't have anybody in mind. I'm not looking at any of you with the thought of you need this lesson. I really don't have any group of people who need it. I think as a whole, this is something that needs discussion and careful consideration. And what I do know is that a number of individuals here in this congregation have struggled with a great deal with the use of alcohol in the past, to the point that they've needed to have some type of professional help to be able to overcome that use or that or drugs along with it. For them, it would be a very dangerous thing ever to, again, to take even one drink. I know that there are men here who have made a decision that they will no longer drink in any type of social circumstance that often comes along with our jobs. They've made a decision not to do that, for reasons of perhaps protecting their reputation or the effect that it has had upon their family in some way or another, and they've made those kinds of decisions. The other thing I think that we should all be aware of is that our topic is within a larger umbrella, making moral decisions. How do you decide about doing right or wrong, or what is right and what is wrong? And there are a number of young people that are here who need to make up their own mind in regard to this question. They may already have instructions from their parents or others, but they need to make up their own mind what the Scriptures really say about this and determine what their practice and habits will be in life. And so that it's worthy for them to think through some of the things we'll talk about this morning, along with those who have not been Christians for very long. Oftentimes somebody will come to understand who Christ is and want to follow Him, but may not have a full understanding of questions like this or other moral questions where the principles we're going to talk about this morning would be helpful in making those a deeper understanding about this. Another comment I'll make at the beginning is that I know sometimes when you see a guy of my age, and this, I want those of you who've known me for a long time to understand this, I want you to sympathize that I'm actually saying that, you know, somebody of my age. When you see somebody with this much gray hair, and we're talking about something that has to do, especially with those that are young, have making decisions about this, that you might feel that I'm one of the least qualified to do this. Oftentimes we consider those who are of this age to be sort of stuck in their ways, unable to look more freshly at the Scriptures. We've just kind of taken certain practices and traditions along the way, and that's really what informs how we're going about making these kinds of decisions. I'd like to suggest to you, at least this morning, in two ways my age is helpful to our discussion. One of them is the fact that I have been a member of this congregation for over 30 years. And that gives me a perspective of the group of people who are both here this morning and those who have worshipped here over the years. And one of the interesting things that I've recognized as I've been preparing this lesson is that in all of those 30 years, not a single time has any Christian here ever offered me an alcoholic drink. Not one time. And when you think about that, you have to also recognize that what that means is it's not just me today. That's back when I was in my 20s, in my 30s, in my 40s. All through that time period, at different stages of life, before we had children, with members of all kinds of different ages, those who've moved on from here, thousands of individuals, never, not one time. And there's something about that that's worthy of thinking of. I can't remember a single time in which I've been in someone's home in which I saw that there were alcoholic beverages, though that may be attributed to my age as well. I may have forgotten something along the way that I should have remembered, but I don't remember that. And I think that's an important thing to consider. And the other thing is that for those of you that are visiting and may not understand this, we have an unusual preaching arrangement here. I am not a full-time preacher. I am not a supported preacher. My 30 years plus in Atlanta, I have worked for a number of companies, the majority of whom were places where, and even to this moment now, where the use of alcoholic beverages, the drinking of those things, is closely associated to my work. And so I'm around it quite a bit. And I see and understand that perspective of it as well. But I want to stress that this lesson needs to depend on the Scriptures and not on my own inadequate wisdom or the perspective that I had. However helpful it may be to some degree, this needs to be a scriptural lesson. And the last comment that I'll make I think is especially important. This question about occasional, even if we call it, say, moderate, not drunken use of alcohol, is one that's not going to be addressed by a simple pulling up a couple of passages that say, thou shalt not do this, or thou shalt do this. We're not going to find that there's a simple passage that's going to address this topic. Now, as I said before, I think there are some simple passages that will address the idea of drunkenness. We're not talking about that. We're talking about just an occasional drink, just one drink. Maybe you alone somewhere, and trying to say that's not something that a Christian should do. And we're not going to find a simple passage that will explain that. So what do you do when you are trying to determine good and evil without And I don't know how that happened. I changed that word this morning. I don't like the word clear instructions. I actually think that there are clear instructions. I just need to learn better how to change and save things before I come. I want you to read that word as simple. I don't think that there are simple instructions on this matter in the Scriptures, but I do think that there are clear instructions. What do you do when you don't have kind of a simple, easy statement that you can follow and look at? Well, I think the Scriptures actually prepare us for that fact. They tell us that not every decision that you're going to make about things that are right and wrong are going to be ones where you can go to a passage and it'll just tell you, that's right, or that's not right. That's something that's sinful. Here's a passage that will help us from Hebrews 5, verse 13 through verse 14. Everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness since he's a child. But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant use or practice to distinguish good from evil. There's two things I want you to especially notice from this passage. I've highlighted those. The last of it in the passage is the fact that what the writer is talking about are things that are either good or evil. He's trying to describe a very complicated spiritual matter, and he realizes that he's writing to individuals who haven't yet gotten to a point where they're able to handle that kind of information, but he thinks that they ought to get there. They need to become more mature in their thinking. But what he's talking about here are things that have to do with good or evil, right or wrong. Sometimes there are things that are right or wrong that you're just not going to be able to immediately see in the Scriptures. How do you then find out? Well, what is right or wrong? If it's not easy, how do I find out? How do I determine it? He says you need to use your powers of discernment. You have the ability to figure this out, but you're going to have to work at it. You're going to have to exercise a little bit of maturity, some deeper thinking than what might otherwise be there in just a simple milk of the word kind of fashion. You're going to have to dig into some deeper things. And so I want to go back and point out that in this matter that we're talking about, it's not going to be that there's one simple passage that's going to say, you shall not have even an occasional drink, or it's okay to do that. We're not going to find something simple. And I want to go back for a moment and point out what people will often say in regard to defending an occasional drink. I questioned myself about this, the title of this slide, but I want to be fair about this. There are those who will understand that, well, let me just say this before I even go through this. I'm going to tell you what I think about the physical nature of a drink of alcohol. I don't believe that it touching your lips or touching your tongue or going down into your body constitutes a sinful act in and of itself. And you're going to hear me say in and of itself quite a few times this morning. There's nothing that I can tell from the Scriptures that's going to say that somehow that physical thing itself going down automatically is a sin. Now, I do understand that from time to time we point out that there is a physical harm that can come from drinking alcohol. At times someone will say that it will destroy a certain number of brain cells every time you take a drink. But I'm also aware of the fact that I read about those studies that say an occasional drink of wine will help your heart and will keep it strong. And what we're not trying to do this morning is somehow or another weigh off two types of medical studies, one against another. We want to go to the Scriptures to determine the right and wrong in regard to this. And so what I want to do is to just simply acknowledge some of the things that are said in defense of an occasional drink and see at the end, does it really tell us anything more than that that is okay in and of itself, but there's more to be determined as to whether it's sinful to do it or not. And I'll try to make this clear as we go a little bit further on. But here's some things that are often said. For one thing, there's the use of wine that we find throughout the New Testament, especially in the life of Christ, in places like John chapter 2. Remember in John chapter 2, Jesus is at a wedding feast, and at that feast there is wine. And not only that, but at some point during that, they run out of the wine, and Jesus takes these vats of water and He turns them into wine. And so, of course, the idea of some would be that that ought to justify the ability to have at least a non-drunken situation of using wine. A couple of things we should note about that. First of all, we don't really know whether or not that wine was alcoholic or not alcoholic. But I don't want to argue the point. Let's just assume for the moment that the alcohol that was there was of a very low amount of, or the wine rather, was of a very low content of alcohol, and that they drank some of that. That still would not keep us from having to make a moral decision as to whether or not it would be right in our circumstances to have an occasional drink or not. That's a very important thing. First of all, the fact that we don't know whether it was alcoholic or not. And second of all, if it were, it does not end the discussion. And we're going to see that very carefully when we look at the principles that we have to apply in making this decision. The second thing that's said sometimes is that there appears to have been some alcohol in that 1 Corinthians 11 where there's partaking of the Lord's Supper. That's a very interesting one. There, Paul is criticizing the Corinthians for the manner in which they were partaking of the Lord's Supper. There are a lot of sins that were going on, and among the things that were happening was they were coming together and they were dividing off into groups. And some were even making a whole meal out of the Lord's Supper. And he just says, look, you've got homes to have your meals. He explains the purpose of coming together was that for all of them to remember the Lord's death. But in his description of how they were off in their corners and stuff and making a whole meal, he says that some of them were even drunk. Well, it certainly seemed to indicate that some of them had brought or had in their possession alcoholic beverages. Now, he's not defending them having it, and he's certainly criticizing altogether what they were doing. But I suppose you could say maybe the Lord's Supper involved a fruit of the vine that had some degree of alcohol in it. Even if that were the case, we still have to make up our minds as to whether or not a moral decision, is it right to have a drink or not? The next thing is there were those qualifications for deacons in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 8. And if you look at your translation, you're going to get a couple of different readings. The one that I have in the English Standard Version says that one of the qualifications is that deacons are not to be addicted to much wine or given to much wine, is another way it said. I think what this is a parallel statement to 1 Timothy 3 and verse 3, where elders are told that they are not to be drunkards. But I suppose the argument could be made that what this is saying is that you need to be moderate in your use of wine. And it would clearly be an alcoholic wine that he has reference here. And I don't think that he's talking about them being moderate. I think he's saying don't be a drunkard. It's just another way of saying it. But nevertheless, even if there was a use at that time of a small amount of alcoholic beverages, it doesn't justify us. We still have to make a moral decision about this based on the Scriptures. Hang with that thought for a moment. And then finally there was a statement to Timothy. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 23. You remember this. Timothy was told that he should no longer just drink water, but that he should take some wine for his stomach's sake. There were some ailments that Timothy had. And you can see what may be the case here. Once more, we do not know whether this was alcoholic wine or not. We have no idea. It could very well be that what he's being told, as we often say when somebody goes to a place that they're not familiar with, be careful about drinking the local water, especially if you have a sensitivity to that. Here is a distilled drink that would be something that would be more protective, would appear more pure, and you'd be able to take that, help your stomach. But let's just be clear about this. If we have stomach ailments today, we've got a lot better medicines and solutions to deal with that than any type of wine, whatever kind of wine this may have been that Timothy was told. At best, what I think is demonstrated by all of these is that the physical act, we've said before, the physical act of alcohol coming into your mouth and into your body is not a sin in and of itself. But you're going to need more information and you're going to need more thought to determine whether it's actually right or wrong. And that's what I want us to do this morning. I want us to think carefully about whether it is right or wrong. You know what would help us? Would be if we had a Bible example. Something that would speak right in parallel to what we're talking about this morning. If we had a Bible example where something was shown to be okay in and of itself, but then principles were applied to determine whether you should do it anyway, and a decision was made not to do that, that would be a very nice parallel to see and would help us in terms of making the right decision in regard to alcoholic drinks. There is such a parallel. It's the example about the meats that were sacrificed to idols. If you would, turn in your Bibles over to 1 Corinthians chapter 8. We're going to look at chapter 8, parts of 9, chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians, those three chapters, and then I believe that Romans 14 and Romans 15 also deal with this same topic. We cannot go very deeply into these things at all this morning, and it would be well worth your time and effort to spend more time later on your own reading these things. But I want to establish for you at the beginning what's being talked about here and three important things before we look at the principles that are involved. The meats that were sacrificed to idols, what that means is that in that day, in the Roman culture, in the Greek culture, really pretty much everywhere that Paul went to preach the gospel, there would have been these animals that were sacrificed to various gods, to various idols, oftentimes in extremely elaborate temples that were the very center and heart of the culture of the city in which Paul was in. And that meat, those animals that had been sacrificed, the meat from those animals in turn would be sold, often in the marketplace, maybe there at the temple, but it would be sold, and a great deal of the meat that the population would eat was meat that had been sacrificed to these idols. And so if you were a non-Jewish Christian, wherever you were in the world at that time, you would have to make a decision about whether or not it was okay for you to eat those meats that had been sacrificed to the idol. It'd be pervasive. Very similar to the fact that pretty much everywhere we go in our culture today, we're going to come across alcohol. It's everywhere, and we need to make a decision as a Christian about to what degree, if any, we will have an association with it. They were making those kinds of decisions related to this meat that had been sacrificed to the idols. And Paul says three important things about it. Number one, he says that consuming these meats is not a sin in and of itself. In fact, he makes the argument for why it isn't. He says, you know why? It's because the idol doesn't even exist. It's not like that once that animal's been sacrificed to an idol, that something has changed in the nature of that meat. And that if you put that meat on your tongue, something awful has happened. It's nothing physical in the nature of that meat that makes it a sin, because there's no such thing as an idol. But he then goes on to give some principles for determining whether a Christian should ever eat such meat. And his conclusion at the end, having started with something that he says, in and of itself, this is not a sin, he says, if you eat it, you have sinned against Christ and against your brothers and sisters. We need to keep that in mind. To somehow hang on the fact that something that, it's okay by itself, and forget about the principles that need to be applied to decide whether you can do it or not, is a non-scriptural approach. It's a non-godly approach. And here Paul says, it's okay by itself, but don't do it because it's sinful. And here's why. He gives a number of principles, and what I'm going to do is try to go through these very quickly. And I want, if you're in 1 Corinthians 8 through 10, you might even keep your finger back in Romans 14 and 15 for a moment. We're going to take these quickly, more or less, in the order in which they come in this section of 1 Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians 8, verses 1 and 2, what he says is that knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. Love builds up. Here's a principle that you need to apply when you're trying to decide whether something is okay or not. It's not enough just to have knowledge about it. In this case, he's saying it's not enough to know that those meats are just sacrificed to non-existent idols and that there's nothing in the physical nature of that meat that makes it wrong to eat it. He says, you've got to apply love. And what that means is sometimes when I talk about things that, oh, this is just between me and God. You ever heard that said about some things? He's saying in regard to this, it's not just between you and God. It relates to love. Love has to do with you and your brothers and sisters. And I think you'll easily see why that's true of alcohol as well. But in the case of meat sacrifice for idols, they had to think about their brothers and sisters. He says that a practice that otherwise is right in and of itself can cause a brother to stumble and therefore must be avoided. In fact, he repeats this. In 1 Corinthians 8, 9 and 10, you can see one of the things that he says about this. He says, take care that this right of yours, the right he's talking about, is the fact that, hey, I've already told you, there's nothing inherently in that meat itself that makes it sinful. But be careful that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged if his conscience is weak to eat food offered to idols? Be careful about the influence you're having on others. You can cause them to stumble. In fact, in Romans 14 and 13, Paul commands that we decide never to put a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of a brother. Never. If I see a situation in which my action that might otherwise seem to be okay, but if it's going to cause a problem, a stumbling block to my brother, never do it, is the point that he makes. And he also says, in Romans 14, verse 20 and 21, it would be good not to eat, or even says specifically, not to drink wine if it causes a brother to stumble. The next principle that must be applied is I've got to put my brother's interest before my own in terms of exercising my rights. And the rights, again, here are perhaps the rights to do something that otherwise would be okay, but because it affects my brother, I've got to think that through. Well, whose interests come first? Who should I be more? Is it about my interest or about my brother's? And you know this. It is a principle that runs all the way through the New Testament. I've got to put my brother's interest first. And so Romans 14 and verse 19 says something like, let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding. I need to look for those things that build me up and builds my brother up. I've got to be concerned about him. But 1 Corinthians 10... and verse 24 just puts it in the strongest language I think that it can. It says, let no one seek his own good but the good of his neighbor. I'm not going to do something just because it's what I like, it's what I want to do. I'm going to put the interest of my brother ahead of myself. And to fail to do that is the very thing that he goes into in 1 Corinthians 8 and 11 and 12 where he says, if you ignore this, that's a sin. You've sinned against Christ, you've sinned against your brother, even though it was something that otherwise might not be sinful in and of itself. But having done this and harmed your brother, you have committed a sin. In fact, I should make any sacrifice for others. The way he puts it in verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 8 is, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. Paul says, I'll just give up meat altogether. Not just meat sacrificed to idols, I think he's saying, I'll give up meat, period, if it would ever cause my brother to stumble. That's the degree to which we should be thinking about the interest of others. And in fact, I think that's exactly what Paul did. That's the kind of example he set. You remember that language in the next chapter where he begins to talk about how that he became all things to all people? You know, to the Jews he was as a Jew, to the Gentiles he was as a Gentile. I think oftentimes we misunderstand what that passage is all about. In the context here, what he's talking about is the fact that he had certain rights. He had the right to take a wage from the Corinthian church because he had preached among them. And he said, when I was there, I chose not to do that because it would have been wrong in that particular circumstance. But not only that, he says that what he's doing is he's giving up his rights, the things that he otherwise could have done, because he recognized that those were stumbling blocks. They kept others from coming to Christ, and that principle needs to be applied. And then there's this one. I want you to turn over to 1 Corinthians 10. This is a very important one. And a little bit hard to follow at first because he's made such a point about this meat sacrificed to idols not really being sinful in and of itself. And yet then he comes back and says that it is so closely associated with the things of the devil that you just should not do it. Verse 14, he says, "Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to sensible people. Judge for yourselves what I say." I like that because he's saying, look, you're going to have to think about this for a minute. And I think you're smart enough to do that. I think you can exercise your judgment. I think you can exercise your powers of discernment here to think about this. And then here's what he has to say down in verse 19, down through verse 22 in regard to this. He says, pardon me for a minute. He says that, what do I imply then? That food offered to idols is anything, or that an idol is anything? No, I imply that what pagans sacrifice, they offer to demons and not to God. I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons. Shall we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than He? He's saying somehow or another, this, even though we know there's nothing inherent in that meat that makes it wrong, it's so closely associated with the idols that by the time you think about actually eating it, you have associated yourself with idolatry and with the things of demons to the point that now you are more closely associated with the devil than you are with God. And he makes this point in the same chapter, that all things are lawful, but not all things edify. There's some things that are lawful, they're right in and of themselves, but because they don't help anyone, they don't build us up, they don't bring us closer to God, they should be avoided. And so finally he says at the very end of that chapter that God's glory is the thing that has to come above all else. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Now, again, I urge you, there's a lot of meat in these passages and in these principles. And a lot of places in which you can apply this to other topics beyond the topic that we're talking about this morning. But I want to end by making some practical considerations. I want to try to apply these principles that we've looked at here to this question that we have for the morning. Should a Christian, even one time, just on an occasional basis, Take an alcoholic drink in any situation or circumstance? Here's what I want you to think very carefully about those. And I want you to do your best to make the applications and to be as open-minded as you can as you consider these things. The first thing I want you to know, and I'm going to state this as strongly as I can, I believe this with all my heart, I don't think this can be refuted. If there was a knowledge here, a broad knowledge that you consume alcoholic beverages to any degree, in any circumstance whatsoever, it would be a discouragement to your brothers and sisters in Christ. And I can say that with no question for those that I think would actually be a stumbling block, those who have had to struggle greatly to overcome the use of alcohol and drugs in their life. If they knew that you were using it on occasion and defending its use, even if though you may try to draw the distinction that I'm not drunk, I never get close to that, it would be hard for them. You would discourage them. You would present a stumbling block in their efforts. The other thing is that there are others, and I hesitate to describe them as stronger Christians because I'm going to put myself in this group. I don't like to be necessarily describe myself this way, but I can tell you that if I knew that you were involved in this type of practice, that you would not in any way whatsoever tempt me to drink of this. There are many things in life I struggle with greatly. This is not one of them. And so knowing that you drink is not at all going to be an influence on me, but it would discourage me. I would be so disappointed to know that. In trying to carry out the Lord's work and to do what we can, if I knew that was the case in your life, I would be deeply disappointed and discouraged. And I know that others would be as well. And it would have a negative impact on the young people that are here and those that have been newly converted, if it was widely known that you were doing this, they are making moral decisions for the first time in their life. And you may feel like, and this goes back to the principle of knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. You may have it in your mind, you may have figured out the distinction where this is okay, where it's not, how it's not drunkenness. You may have divided that line very finely and understand it to great detail how it applies to you. They're not going to see that distinction. And if you think that the knowledge of you doing this will not have an effect on young people who are trying to make up their minds and who are headed out into circumstances in which the culture is that everybody of their age engages in not just this practice, this morning subject, but to the point of being drunk, if you think that your actions are not going to have an effect on them, I think you're being very naive. And lastly, if this isn't coming across, the effect that your behavior, the knowledge of it would have on others, I want you to think about this. What if you found out that in my actions, in my work over those 30 years, that I have regularly drunk alcohol in almost every business situation where there was an opportunity? Does that raise your opinion of me as an elder here, or does it lower it? What about some godly woman here that you know? If you knew that she was involved in any type, even the smallest amount of activities of drinking, would it increase your opinion of her as a child of God, or would it diminish it? Or what about any of the other elders? Or of Marty? Or how about Ben? How about Ben and Emily? If you knew that Ben and Emily were doing this just in their home, just in private and all, would that increase your opinion of them? And what do you think about the parents of high school kids and middle school kids? Would they be more comforted by knowing that that's what's happening in Ben and Emily's home? Or would they be concerned about it and worried about it? About the ability of their children to see the difference between that and the other things that we know, without any question, are simple. Would it have an effect, a stumbling block, a discouraging effect? I don't see how we can draw any other conclusion but that it would. The second thing is that it's difficult to conceive of any good that's achieved by an occasional moderate drinking. And I'll tell you, I've been thinking about this lesson for over 2 months, and I'm sorry, I know I'm going over a few minutes, but I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I cannot think of one good thing that comes out of doing this. Is it something good that's related to our jobs? I mean, certainly sometimes I think you could make the argument that there's an advantage at work if you do this. I can tell you it's not harmed my career, but maybe it could have been an advantage. But if it was an advantage, it's not a necessity. And if it's an advantage, to what goal, to what end? Is it my own personal success? Is it some ambition? Is it the ability to make more money? None of those goals came into any one of those principles that we looked at. My own interest, I was told, to submit and put below the interest of others. So even if I could argue that somehow or another in my job it was an advantage, and I know if you believe that it's a necessity that you drink in your job, all I can tell you is I would urge you to leave that job. There are many jobs. In fact, my job, you had to take a drug test before. If I had shown up with a small amount of alcohol, I wouldn't have been hired. There are jobs where people care more about your performance, not about your drinking. Quit a job if you feel that you have to do it. And I would ask you, well, let me just one other thing. Is it because you need it for relaxation? I understand that point. I'm no doubt there are situations in which it is more relaxing. It could lead to that. But there are other ways to relax that don't have any association with these bad things. I think you understand the point. And then this, would you be embarrassed for others to know your practice? And is this something that you have to kind of like, some people, I'll let them know, but there are others that they wouldn't understand this. You know, when we get to a point where we do something that we're not comfortable with everybody knowing, we need to really ask ourselves whether that's a good thing to do. Is that a proper, right thing that's not sinful. There's a passage earlier in Corinthians I think is interesting. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 in verse 5, it says that God will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. And two things. One, whatever I'm doing that I think nobody else knows, one day that's going to be brought to light. I need to be ready for that. And the second thing is that the purposes of my heart will be revealed. Why? Why am I doing this? Is going to be known. And I better understand the purpose behind anything that I'm doing. What is my goal? What is my motivation in that? And then lastly, I will just tell you that I believe firmly that in our country at this point in time, that drinking alcoholic beverages in any quantity, in any circumstance at all, it's more closely associates us with the devil than with God. And I think you know that's the case. I mean, just think about the manner in which it is advertised. Think about the culture of drinking that exists on any college campus. And I'll just say, maybe this is the point at which somehow or another we need to begin to bring back together somewhat the linking of even the occasional drink with the idea of drunkenness. Because you can't completely separate those things. That's not the way that alcoholic use is advertised, glorified, talked about, mentioned in our society. It just isn't. They have a connection there that we have to examine and think about whether or not my practice in this area makes me more associated with the devil or more associated with God. As a Christian, I want to be known completely for my association with the Lord, not with the world. And I have to look at this and think honestly, is this making me more closely associated with God or with the things of the world? I'll tell you, I appreciate so much your attention. I am very sorry for having gone this long. You can't always tell how much you'll end up saying. But I am open, maybe more than my tone or my approach may suggest to you, I am very open to any discussion in regard to this topic. And while I feel pretty certain I've made my position clear, I put it on the screen for about 10 minutes, my points may not have been that clear. I may have said a number of things that were confusing. I'd be glad to talk to you about those things. And I think you should keep in mind that these scriptural principles today have a much, much broader application. If this didn't tell you much of anything new, I hope that these principles will help you in making other moral decisions. The most important decision, though, is whether to become a child of God. And if you're ready to do that this morning, if you know that Jesus is the Son of God and you're willing to confess that before others, turning away from your sin and to be baptized this morning so your sins can be washed away, we would encourage you to do that or to tell us what else you may need in terms of our help if you'll come forward as we stand and as we sing.
Would you be free from the burden of sin? There far is the blood, far is the blood. Would you or evil a victory win? There wonderful power in the blood. There is power, power, the wonder-working power.
Working power is the
the prayer.